a guy up there yelling, you know, you gotta run to the two of us that were back there. And I was exhausted and I kept wanting to stop and walk. And I kept looking at my watch and I was like, no, I've got this amount of time. So I kept slowing down. And then I had three people that like ran me into the end and really kept me going. So they're like, unless you run, you're not going to make it. And I wasn't sure. I knew it was really close when I got to the finish line and I was pretty sure I had made it, but I wasn't entirely convinced and I knew it was close.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hey, my guest this week is Natalie Bickers. I saw her on Instagram when she ran the Moab 240. She was DFL, which is in ultramarathon runners, in case you don't know, that's dead frickin' last. And it is an honor among ultra runners to actually have that. But she took this to the next level. She finished the Moab 240, 240 miles, and she beat the cutoff by 2 seconds. She's a very ambitious runner. I'll talk a little bit about her history and how she got started and kind of what she's done and where she's going. Great conversation, a lot of inspiration. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Natalie Bickers. Welcome and thank you so much for being here, Natalie. I would like to get kind of acquainted and find out a little bit about what's your history as a runner. Did you start as a child or did you start later in life?
I started much later in life. I tried when I was like in elementary school, middle school. It hurt, so I stopped. I didn't do it. I tried starting again in my early 20s because I knew it was something I wanted to do, but kind of ran into the same thing. I didn't know that, you know, you didn't have to start all out. You could just kind of ease into it. And then I didn't do anything for at least 6-7 years. And then I started again and I had figured out by then I needed to start smaller. Mm-hmm. So did my first 5K in March of 2013. And it just kind of built from there. And then once I had worked up to half marathons, you know, I was on the quest to do the 50 states half marathon. And then I was going to go around and do marathons in every state. And I started stacking up races, like doing the multiple day thing, like where I would go to 5 or 6 states and just do them each day. And
so you would do a half marathon or a marathon in each state a day?
Half. And it, yeah, once I was going to do a marathon in each one and I did like 2 in a row and I'm like, no, we're doing the half marathon the next day.
So I was curious, yeah. Were they organized races or did you just go and run the distance? Cause I was thinking during the middle of the week, I mean, if you were doing, you know, back-to-back days, yeah. did they have organized races in the middle of the week?
Yeah, I was going down with mainly marathons. Which I'd kind of just discovered in searching out things. So going with that company where it was just, you know, short loop courses and could get out and do them and could change distances if I needed to. So okay. That was helpful. Mm-hmm. Wow, so cool. That was like in 2015 and then worked my way up. The next year I decided, well, I want to do longer. I know there's longer. I had found videos on YouTube by then of these ultras, which really, really intrigued me. And I knew they existed, but I hadn't really looked at them before. So, you know, the very first video I saw that just absolutely captured my attention was Western Time, Billy Yang's film.
Oh, yes.
On,
mm-hmm.
On Sally McRae in Western States. And I was like, oh, that is something I'm going to do eventually. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that kind of started it all. And I jumped in both feet probably a little too quickly making the jump, but I did, and it worked out.
Good. So anyway, we were talking about running road half marathons and switching to trail. So
So I was doing the switch to doing the multiple day half marathons, just loops. You know, they're like mile out and back, basically loops, and doing up to like a week of those. And then I was like, well, if I can do this, I can certainly go up in distance. So then I worked to marathon, and then decided that I needed to make a jump to trail and to longer at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I did that in 2016, and did my first ultras in August of that year, and thought it would be a good idea to do several of them in a row, like in the same month.
In the same month. So what distance? What distance did you start out with?
50K.
50K. So, okay.
Yeah. So I did 3 50Ks that month, and two of them were trail, and one was local bike path type. So a little bit of variety.
But you were already doing marathons and kind of the same way, you know.
Yeah. I was still fairly new to even just to marathon. So it was like I did a pretty big jump, which in hindsight probably wasn't the wisest thing, but it worked out. Yeah.
So I guess what you know, you jumped in that big. What was what was kind of like behind it? Is that something? I mean, do you do that? Is that kind of normal for you, or was it kind of special?
Yeah, I tend to kind of do the go big or go home type of thing. So, yeah, I didn't see why I couldn't do it. So I thought I'm just gonna do it. If I'm gonna go that far, then. Because at that point, you know, 31 miles is a long distance.
It is.
Absolutely. But it was like, I know there's longer out there. So my brain made it into, well, it's really not that long.
Right.
And then you're out there and you're like, oh, no, this is a long way. This is a long way. And then two of them were trail. The first one was Siskiyou Outback down in near Ashland, which is somewhat hilly, and I didn't have a lot of hill experience at all. You know, I had a little bit, but not enough, not nearly enough. And then the local 49K, and then I did Squamish 50K after that, and did not realize that that's one of the harder, you know. One of the harder known
50Ks. Yeah. Yes. I've heard of it. Now, not to remind me where Squamish is. I remember hearing about it and that it was a tough course, but yeah. Where is it located?
It's in Squamish, British Columbia.
British Columbia. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So, and, did those for a while, and then I don't write my races down anymore. I used to write everything down and I don't anymore. So my timelines are really kind of loose as far as what races came next. It's like, if I hear one, I'm like, oh yeah, I did that. And I can remember when, but, I do know that I eventually went up to 100K and then 100 miles.
Yeah. And, so was that your intent?
Don't remember exactly when.
Was that your intent when you started running ultras? Did you kind of have, you said the Western time was what inspired you. Was that kind of your goal to do 100? You're working toward that?
Yeah. 100 miles was kind of my ultimate goal. And I didn't know how many of those I'd do, or, you know, I just didn't know because it was all so unknown. So then I had a couple unsuccessful attempts and then finally had my first successful 100 miler at Zion in 2019. So
wow.
So Zion 100.
So what were the ones that you didn't make? If you made Zion, that Zion, I have friends who have run Zion and they say that's a pretty challenging course as well.
Yeah. I had been doing a friend of mine is a race director. And so I attempted Run Amok down in Tennessee a couple of times, and it's a pretty rooty course. So I had trouble with that. Mm-hmm. And then Rocky Raccoon, my first attempt on that, it was same thing, really rooty, and I blistered up immediately.
Wow.
Almost immediately. Wow. And so I had to drop like a mile 39, 40 there. So, I mean, I've had a lot of DNFs, but I've had a fair number of finishes too.
Well, that's good. I know that Candace Burt I heard a quote from her. She says, if you don't have a few DNFs, you're not trying hard enough. And yeah. or you're not challenging yourself enough.
Right. I look at it as I was trying something harder than what I knew I could do. But I've also gone back to Zion and I got a DNF this year. So, you know.
Well, my friend did as well. I heard Zion, if I remember, this year was pretty hot, if I remember.
It was very hot.
And didn't they change the course?
The course was a different course. Not entirely. It was just in a different order.
Okay. Right. Yeah. That's what I remember. You know, she said it was a different order and made it more difficult.
And I got to I think I was a mile 52 when I dropped and I was done with the hard part and I just sat there and I was ready to go. I changed clothes. I had my headlamp. I just was like, I don't want to be out here anymore. So kind of drug my feet and then was like, So in hindsight, I should have kept going. I have a lot of those where it's like, I really should have kept going.
So what, how do you talk yourself out of those? I mean, when you're in that place?
I haven't figured out a foolproof method yet because I still struggle with that. I still definitely, physically, yes, they're difficult. They're really hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're supposed to be. Yeah. That's what we do.
Yeah. But the mental part is the challenging. And usually when I've been able to talk myself out of it, it's usually remembering why I came out there, mm-hmm. you know, to prove to myself that I could and just to enjoy the course more than anything. Because that's why I travel to so many of them, because I like seeing other parts of the country. And it's kind of thrilling to be like, hey, I've been on that course where so many people will never be, or, you know, they might be out for like a day hike, but they're not out there for hours and hours and hours and through and the night.
They don't get to see it at night. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a big part of it for me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. So when did you, I mean, you did some hundreds. When did you make the jump to decide that, well, that wasn't enough. You need more?
Last year, probably about 3 months or so before registration opened up for Bigfoot and Moab and Tahoe for all those. I'd been thinking about it and finally decided, okay, well, if I'm going to do it, then, you know, this is the year. I'm going to jump right in mm-hmm. and attempt it. So I entered the lottery for Bigfoot and for Tahoe. And got into both of those. And I knew that I was going to sign up for all three. And then when Moab opened up, you know, I was like on there a minute after it opened. Uh-huh. So.
So you did the Triple Crown this year?
I attempted. Yeah. I dropped at Bigfoot it was like mile 76 at Elk Pass there. And then Tahoe got canceled because of the fires.
Oh yes, I'd forgotten about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I could have done, and they did have a virtual option and I had two different courses planned out and plans, and then I ended up working instead. Mm-hmm. So I did not do that. But I did get Moab done.
Yeah, yeah. So what was Moab like? I mean, I've heard people who have been there and, you know, say it's a pretty rough country.
It's really rocky, which I went into that knowing. I knew there were going to be a lot of, and it was going to be, you know, typical desert, sandy, dusty, you know, big temperature extremes and potential for pretty brutal environment. So I went into that knowing it. But since I don't live in that area, you know, mm-hmm. I only see snippets of it. It did not disappoint. We had every weather condition possible out there. It's gorgeous though. So that helps dull all of the extremes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think nighttime out there in the desert is just one of the most beautiful places you can be.
Yeah. Yes. And there would be not very many lights. And I would imagine that, even, you know, being that big of a course, you'd kind of be spread out. You might see one or two mm-hmm. other runners, but
Yeah, I saw the same group of probably 15 to 20 people pretty frequently, and I wasn't at the end the whole time. I kind of slowly went back there because, this distance is new for me, and I know that I get slower quickly in the longer events. So I was mentally prepared to be like, okay, I'm going to be near the end. So I saw the same 15, 20 people pretty frequently at the aid stations and on the trail, a lot of leapfrogging. So, you feel like you get to know people out there a little bit.
And so, having done, a couple of hundreds, what's it like jumping to, I mean, to 240? I mean, that's a big jump. I mean, that's not like marathon to a 50K. That's
Physically, yeah, it was tougher, but the sleep deprivation and the knowing how to rest and the refueling, I think, was much harder than the actual physical part of it. With that jump in distance, I mean, you're tired and fatigued, and everything still hurts a little bit. Definite needing to take care of, feet and just, your body in general. I was not as prepared for the fatigue as I thought I was, and that's kind of what got me in the end and put me towards the end and then to the end was just, pure exhaustion. So
Did you have a plan for, I mean, how much did you get to sleep? I mean, that's one of those things that, that's has to be part of your strategy.
yeah, well, I didn't know how much I was going to need. I was thinking back, so I was like, okay, well, in a 100 miler, I'm not sleeping. I'm taking a couple longer breaks and a lot of short breaks. I did 135 miles earlier this summer, and I knew I had tried to sleep, and I couldn't sleep at about like mile th 32 hours or so into it. So my plan going into Moab was, oh, I'll be okay getting to the halfway point. Because and I knew there was climbing and I'd be going slower. It took me longer to get to that halfway point than I anticipated. And I was pretty exhausted by the time I got there. So I had to lay down. I think the first time I laid down was at a little over 100 miles at Bridger Jack, so around mile 103. I laid down. I wasn't able to sleep more than a couple minutes. And that was kind of another thing I hadn't anticipated in is you can lay down, but it doesn't mean you're going to necessarily sleep, even if you're really tired. So I laid down probably 3 to 4 hours total through the whole thing. And actual sleep, I don't know exactly. I think a generous amount would be about 3 hours of sleep. The only time I feel like I actually fell asleep was at the very at Porcupine Man at the final aid station. I fell asleep when they were taping my feet up, and they woke me up as everybody was leaving. So,
You mean they were packing up the aid station to go?
almost, almost. We were the last people. There were like four of us leaving at the same time, 3 or 4 of us leaving at the same time. So, they woke me up, and there was still like an hour. I think about an hour left almost before the aid station actually closed. Yeah, and I had been anywhere from usually 5 to 8 hours ahead of where the aid stations were cutting off most of the race.
Yeah, and so those were those were cutoff times where if you had to be there, or they wouldn't let you continue.
Yeah, you had to be out of the aid station by that time. So
So how far was it from the last aid station to the finish line?
18.1 miles. Yeah. Yeah, and I was doing the countdown on my watch, and it was actually going good. I hadn't run in a really long time just because the weather had gotten horrible the night before, and it was muddy and it was cold, and I just was not feeling it. I was able to actually start running some, leaving that last aid station, which really surprised me. But I was excited. It was the last 18 miles, At that point, the aid stations out there are so far apart that 18 miles does not seem like a huge amount anymore. So, yeah, was able to run some, and then the sun went down and I slowed down quite a bit then, and it got rockier. We kind of got into the more of the ledge type of the trail, and it was slower going for sure. And I just wanted to be done.
Yeah.
And time was taking much, it was, time was going faster, but it was taking a lot longer to go down the trail. So, yeah.
So were you, did you have pacers with you?
No, I didn't have any crew or pacers with me at all. By that point, I had the sweepers with me. they were there with me. And then we ran into Matthew Murray and his pacer, probably about 5 miles from the finish line. And so we were kind of all in a group going then, and then down it into the road. So.
Wow. So, you ran the entire race with no pacers and no crew. So you relied on the aids. So you put drop bags down. Was that kind of your strategy?
Yeah, I had 6 drop bags, 3 of them were moving. So it was like basically 9 drop bags. And then aid stations had great food. So yeah. I didn't really need a lot from my bags either. With so much gear that you have to carry, pretty much everything I needed besides like shoes and socks, I already had with me. So I had a lot of backup stuff that I didn't use. Mm-hmm.
Did you have, you carried, how much water did you have to carry? I was thinking about aid stations that far apart.
Yeah. I had a bladder, a two liter bladder, which I didn't have to fill each time, but probably every other aid station. And then I had, a 500 mil, handheld also. Mm-hmm. So, I'd fill the bladder like every other, sometimes every station, depending on how it was that day. And then the handheld definitely each time. So
wow.
I probably did not drink enough. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so, and you said you had temperature extremes. So, down to cold as well as heat.
Yeah, the second day it was pretty sunny out, and I don't know how warm it got, probably mid-70s, which to me is really warm. And then that last night when we had the snow and sleet storms come in, it was, I don't know how cold it was then either, but it was at least in the low 20s, so and pretty wet.
Wow, that would be, so, and you had to carry, you had gear that was ready for that?
Yeah, we had to carry a jacket with a hood. We had a hat and gloves. We had to have long pants, emergency blanket, an emergency poncho, and a couple other things. But I, like when I finished the race, I had on shorts, I had on fleece pants, I had on waterproof pants, I had on a t-shirt, and I had on a long sleeve, and I had on a winter coat, and plus my hat and gloves. Mm-hmm. So it got pretty chilly.
Yeah. So when was it that you knew that you were going to be, really hard chasing the cutoff? I mean, how far out were you?
It was at 9:17, because I remember we were talking, trying to figure out if we were going to make the cutoff. And I remember I looked at my watch. It was 9:17. I was like, no, we're fine. We've got like 5 miles. It's good, you know? But I didn't stop to think about, there was still a little bit of technical trail left. And walking it, like if we had just walked it, it would be, 20 minute miles or so. Mm-hmm. So that would be almost that whole time. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, no, it's good. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. And then I didn't get down to the paved portion, like the flatter bike path. And it was just before 10:10, before I could start off on that. And that was still just a little over 3 miles to get to the finish line from there. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to have to run some, which... it's a bike path, but that meant I was going to have to cut roughly 5 minutes per mile off at that point. And that late in the race, that just seems impossible. So there was a lot of run walking and power hiking that last 3 miles for sure.
So you had 50 minutes to go 3 miles.
Yeah. Yeah. Which does, it seems like plenty. It really does. It's like, wow, that's a long time. But you know,
yeah, well,
you have 237 miles on your body. Yeah. It adds up.
Yeah. After running that far, you know, that you'd have about 16 minute miles. You'd have to average or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's still, I mean, that's not a walk really. I mean,
no, there was, I was stopping and I can't remember a lot of the last day is a blur, in that section, especially, but I do know that I had a lot of walk breaks in there, but they were short. I was doing like running for 3 or 4 minutes and then walking for like a minute just to try to get, so, cause it was too much to even think about running a 5K at that point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
wow. So, and remind me how many, it's 111 hours. How many hours did you have to finish?
Oh, 113.
113. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew it was an odd number. So that, yeah. So it was, how many nights did you go through then?
Four full nights. And then,
okay.
Yeah. And then I finished like at 11 PM. So,
and so you finished
four more hours of darkness
on
that fourth night.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Without much sleep. I know a lot of people talk about having hallucinations. Did you get into that?
I did. Oh yeah. They started the first night and they just kind of gradually, intensified for sure. Something else that I learned was, I was having what's called confabulation, where your brain is making up these logical excuses for what you're seeing. And what I was experiencing was like, in my mind, I had been on all those trails before and I could actually picture what was coming up next on the trails. And I knew where the turns were and I knew where all these were. All the different places were to get down the trail and like the best place to go down a couple of the tricky. And it was really bizarre because even during the race, I was like, no, I've been on this. I did this race here and this race here. And, you know, in high school, we used to hang out up here. and it took probably 2 weeks for me to convince myself afterwards that, no, I really haven't been on these trails before. It was really bizarre.
Wow.
And I don't know why that happens.
Is that something common? I've heard about hallucinations, but I hadn't heard about this. So
I hadn't heard of that before either. So I think it probably is common, but I hadn't heard of it before happening in a race setting. So, and all I can think is like, my mind was kind of just like backpedaling. Like it would just, you know, you send thoughts so quickly through your brain that, mm-hmm. you know, a lot can happen really quick. So I think I was like running and then my brain was kind of rewinding and like replaying it. So I think I was actually probably 5 to 10 seconds behind where I really was in the real world.
Okay.
Yeah. It was weird though. Like I got home and I told my husband, I was like, yeah, did you know that we went camping on Porcupine Trail? And I could tell you exactly where our tent was and what we ate. And, you know, another section of the trail, my sister and I had gone hiking there and I'd been in two races on that section, which was bizarre because I knew where the turns were. So that's the only explanation I can have is that I was kind of living 5 to 10 seconds behind where I really was.
Yeah. So yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah. So, it was very strange and a kind of an eerie feeling too. Cause I didn't realize it at the time. And,
you thought it was real. You were convinced.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was telling other people I've been up here before and this is where we're going. And, and that is where we were going, but I had not been there before.
Wow. So it wasn't, you were, you didn't, I was just thinking about this. Were there any times when you think you actually stretched into the future? I mean, into the.
No. That would be cool though.
Because I was thinking, yeah, if you knew where all the turns were, yeah. You know, actually ahead of time, that would be quite a skill.
Yeah, it would be. No. And then I did have the morning of, less than 24 hours before the end of the race, I did have, I thought I was back home in Alaska, and I just crawled in my bag because I didn't know where I was. What I was seeing was not matching the map at all. And I had my map out because you have to have the track loaded on your phone or something. And I couldn't tell where I was going, and I had it out and I was looking at it and I was following it, but then it was like flipping around and I was looking around and it's absolutely not what I was seeing. So I'm like on my Strava, you look at it and it's the exact same segment. You can see me going up and down it like three times. And so it was probably a good decision for me to just stop then and crawl into my bag. And I closed my eyes for a little bit. I don't know how long I slept, but I think it was probably, in reality, it was probably only about 30 minutes, but it felt like I was there for hours and hours and hours. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't very long.
Did the sleep help? I mean, when you woke back up, were you thinking
clearly? It did. Yeah, it wasn't at first. One of the guys from the race was kind of safety patrolling the road, and he pulled over, and I heard the car, and I kind of popped out of my back, and he asked, he's like, hey, and was talking, he's like, you know, what's your status? And I was like, I don't know. And so he started talking. He's like, where are you? And I was like, I'm in Alaska. And he's like, are you sure about that? And I kind of thought about it. And I'm like, wait a minute. No, I'm in Utah. I'm here for a race. And I was good after that. But at first I wasn't. But I cleared up.
Yeah. So do you think that his question helped you to reset your mind? I mean, if he hadn't shown up, do you think you would have still been in Alaska?
I think I probably would have gone to sleep just kept sleeping.
You would have kept on sleeping. Okay.
Yeah. And, it was 4:30 in the morning. And kind of got pep talked, you know, once he figured out that I was safe to keep going, I wasn't totally out of my mind. I had like 6 hours to get to the next aid station that was only 7 miles away, 7 or 8 miles away. So I was good to keep going. But
yeah, that's wild.
Yeah. It was an interesting last 24 hours for sure.
And I've always heard of, you know, the kinds of mental things that happen at those distances, but everyone is different. And
yeah, I wasn't expecting it because I've only ever had two super, super fleeting hallucination type of things before, that lasted maybe 5-10 seconds and were fine. So this was the first time I had gone through like every single night, something going on. And then to have that kind of extreme, the final night, but then listening to people finish, you know, at the finish line and, talking afterwards, a lot of people were going through really similar things. So, it was pretty intense for everybody.
Yeah. Well, and that could be, you know, could lead you astray as well, I would imagine. I mean,
and that would have been a definite advantage of having a pacer with me. I think it would have, I think I probably still would have gotten a little off track mentally, but I would have at least kept going the correct way.
I think the closest I ever came, I was about 80 miles in, and it was a looped course, and I told my pacer, we're off course. I mean, I didn't see any markings, and I said, I've never been here. Yeah. So this trail, I mean, it was just like, have not been here before.
Yeah.
And she had to run ahead and say, no, there's a flag up
here.
We're
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're right. Yeah. The section right before I kind of totally lost it was the alternate course for the year. So it was, really overgrown in some places, just, you know, more rugged and a lot of climbing. And so I kept thinking I was off course in that section too, but I knew I wasn't, and I was still following my map, so I knew I was okay. But it was a different experience for sure.
Wow. So how did you feel when you found out you had only 2 seconds to spare?
I didn't think I'd made it. So about a quarter mile or so from the end, maybe a little longer. I mean, you could hear people at the finish line over the road. You know, it was late, so there wasn't a huge amount of traffic, but you could hear them. And there was a guy up there yelling, you know, you gotta run to the two of us that were back there. And I was exhausted and I kept wanting to stop and walk. And I kept looking at my watch and I was like, no, I've got this amount of time. So I kept slowing down. And then I had three people that like ran me into the end and really kept me going. So they're like, unless you run, you're not going to make it. And so, I wasn't sure. I knew it was really close. When I got to the finish line and I was pretty sure I had made it, but I wasn't entirely convinced and I knew it was close. So, I know I kind of, you know, I had my head down and I just, before I even stood up, I was like, did I make it? So, cause I wanted to know by how much too.
Right.
So, yeah. Then I was a little shocked that I had made it. So I've had a couple races where I have come in after the finish time and I've gotten counted as an unofficial finisher, but it's like, oh, please don't let this be one of those. Yeah. It would count as a DNF.
Yes. Yes. They count as a DNF, but,
yeah.
Yeah. I had one race that I was, I think, a minute over the cutoff and they gave it to me anyway. So
yeah. Was,
but
yeah.
But it was a local race here and it was
yeah, I knew that wasn't gonna happen here.
Yeah, yeah. So but yeah, it was like a minute over the cutoff and it was nice. It was nice to say to be counted as an official, but so yeah. what is next? I know I've watched you on social media. You've done, I mean, not very long after you did another event, if I remember right.
Yeah, we had a local virtual going on, the Moose Loop, which is in Anchorage, and it's just a trail. I mean, you can go out and do it every day. It's a paved bike path, so it's not like anything rugged, but it's a 30-mile trail. And it's you know, it looks like a moose on the tracing. So that's why it's called the Moose Loop.
Okay.
Yeah. So I signed up. I knew I was, that there was a, the virtual was going on. It's a fundraiser for the Anchorage Parks and Rec Department. I was like, well, I could do that. And because I was going to go down to Cactus Rose in Texas, but car rentals were outrageous. So I was like, I can't do that. I was going to do 100 miles 10 days afterwards.
You were going to do 100. You were going to do 100 miles 10 days after. Wow.
Yeah, that probably would have done me in, but it seemed like a good idea when I registered.
Well, and besides driving, if you were driving from Anchorage to Cactus Rose, Cactus Rose is Bandera, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, and I've been on the course before for both races, so I knew it was a tough course, and my ankles wouldn't have liked it at all. But. Yeah, so I stayed local. I did that in the Moose Loop, and then there was a group of us that did it. And of course, I was like, "Just go ahead." Everybody finished like an hour before me, but I finished it.
So you, I take it you recovered fairly well then. If you're out,
it was okay. It wasn't horrible. It definitely took a long time, and I was really exhausted for a couple of weeks. It took several weeks to get any energy back. I was really tired that day.
So more energy than muscle soreness.
Yeah. It was more energy and just fatigue, and you know, everything still kind of hurt and just wasn't real responsive, but muscles came back better than the rest of the body for sure. Yeah. And then I went back out and actually did the Moose Loop with a friend a couple days ago. On Saturday we did that, and it was less painful this time. So it was a lot better. And then I'm actually going down next week to do Wild Hare down in Texas. I'm going to do 250 miles, a Friday and a Saturday.
Wow. Okay. Back to back.
Yeah. And then it's going to be kind of a, I'm going to be chasing cutoffs on both days.
So okay.
It'll be a little bit of a flashback episode.
Where is Wild Hare? Is that a Tejas Trails event as well?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's outside of Austin in Warda, Texas.
Warda, so, okay. West of Austin?
East of Austin.
East of Austin, okay.
Yeah, about an hour. It looks like it's about an hour. I haven't been to this ranch it's at before, but yeah, it's about an hour east. So
okay.
Pretty remote.
So I was going to ask you, you've run Cactus Rose. What is that like? I mean, I was down in Texas just recently and ran, it was west of Austin, ran a little bit of the hill country.
So Cactus Rose is on the same course as Bandera. Mm-hmm. So it's just a little modified. It's a shorter loop. So it's really rocky. It's got a lot of short, short steep hills, and a lot of kind of roller coastery things, but rocks and nothing. There's only a couple of like flat sections in it. So a lot of hills, a lot of elevation that just kind of creeps up on you.
Yeah. And I had read about that, and I heard there's one that's a pretty good size climb.
Yeah, there's Ice Cream Hill, which is in both races. But like last time I did Bandera, I like was counting my steps, and it's only a couple hundred steps. Really, it's not that tall. And then near the end, I forget how far it is, a couple miles from the end, there's another one. Same thing. It's only a couple hundred steps, but it's steep.
It's pretty steep.
Yeah. And then there's a couple others that are short also.
Short and steep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of that.
Yeah.
But the biggest trick there is rocks. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I knew it was rocky. So are they big rocks or just, I mean, they're just the fact that you're on rocks about the size of grapefruit all the time.
It's a lot of that. Yeah. Yeah. There a lot of them are like fist sized. So,
yeah, you never really have a firm footing to plant your foot. Okay.
No, a few sections.
Okay. Power hiking, if you're a good power hiker, is that a good,
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of the only reason I think finished at Moab is because I can walk really fast and can make up time that way. So
yeah, and that is an important skill for ultra marathons is, I mean, if you've got a good power hike and
Yeah. One of the other runners that was out there, he was like, are you running? And I was like, no, I'm mostly just walking at this point. And he's like, I'm running. How am I not catching up? And I was like, well, you're caught up now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know I'm not super fast, so.
Yeah. I mean, but I
learned to walk fast.
Yeah. And walking fast is, I mean, I kind of, my run and my walk look somewhat similar. If I'm really walking fast, because I'm swinging my arms, arms a lot if I'm walking fast, but I consider it a walk if one foot's on the ground all the time. And so,
right. Yeah.
That's kind of the different, kind of the distinction.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you see it, the speed walkers at the, like the road marathons and stuff. And you're like, they're going faster than me.
I know. I've read some of their times that they put in, and I'm thinking that's just amazing that they can,
right.
You know, they can do 6-8 minute miles. And walk. And I'm like,
okay. Yeah, it's impressive. It's definitely impressive.
Well, and it's also a lot of form. And so their, you know, their form is, I mean, you couldn't keep that up for, well, you know, keeping it up for 100 miles would be really hard on your body, I think.
Yeah, on a trail too.
Yeah, on a trail. Yeah, I don't think you could do it at all on a trail. But. Yeah. So what do you have next? I mean, you didn't do Cactus Rose, so you have anything, anything in... It's a goal race for you or something that was like, oh, here's a race I really want to do.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've got stuff. I try to do my ideal world is, an ultra of some sort every 2 weeks of at least to 50K or pretty close. Doesn't always happen, but that's kind of my goal. Either myself or plan. So I've got the wild hair coming up, and then I've got several, like my next year is basically already planned.
Wow. Okay.
But my next big race is I did get into Hurt 100 this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. We were out camping the other night and I was up till 1 a.m. going, oh my gosh, how am I going to make the cutoffs there? So
is that 30 hours?
36.
36. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I forget what time the cutoff for the last loop is. I want to say it's 28 hours. So you got to be moving.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of climbing. So.
That's a lot of climbing. And so have you ever run in Hawaii before?
I just rode. I did Kona Marathon a few years ago. So heat, yes, but not rainforest at all.
Not the rainforest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've not been on that one, but there's, you know, I've seen some of the trails in Kauai and I saw the trails in Hurt and I was like, yeah, they're very much very similar. The roots are just, they're just amazing.
Yeah, they look a little scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I've got, I mean, I have a lot of other stuff, smaller races in there. And then I'm going back to Zion again, because it's, I think that's probably my favorite course out of every race I've done is for the Zion 100.
So you think you'll go back and do the 200 mile or 240 a mile again?
I'm going to, yeah. Yeah, I'm going back to, I'm going to go back to Bigfoot. I'm in for Bigfoot. I'm in, I'm going to do Cocodona also.
Okay.
Which we'll see how that goes. I'm a little, I'm nervous about the distance and the heat. I mean, I'm nervous about all these because I just, you don't know. I'm so new at the longer distances. I don't know how it's going to go each time.
Cocodona is in the spring, if I remember right, is it?
Early May.
Early May. Okay.
First week of May.
Okay. So still, you know, in the desert's pretty hot there.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Bigfoot. And then I'm going to put in for Moab again, which will, it's supposed to go to lottery, but I don't know if it's actually going to go to lottery. Couple things have been posted that it might not be. It might be first come, first serve again.
So okay. Okay.
We'll see.
And so they don't give necessarily a preference to people who've run it before. I know
no.
some races gave a little bit more weight to those who.
Yeah, you know. No. If I had registered to do, to attempt the Triple Crown again, I could have registered for all three of them several months ago. But the dates for Tahoe got changed because of the wildfire risks being so late in the year.
Mm-hmm.
It got moved up a couple of months and I couldn't go to that. So I'm kind of at the mercy of the lotteries now. So, but I did get into Bigfoot and, yeah, Moab I'll put in for again.
Well, that's cool. So, where can people, follow you if they wanted to kind of see your progress, where can,
oh yeah. So, Instagram is, AK Ultra Run One and then Facebook, of course.
Okay.
My name.
Okay. Okay. That's it. And I'll put the links in the show notes as well. So
yeah, sounds good. Yeah. But yeah, no, so lots planned and, you know, it's really for me all about getting out there and just enjoying the experience more than anything. I don't take a lot of pictures out there because like, I like to think of them in my brain more than on a camera,
mm-hmm.
but I like seeing what other pictures other people take.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'd be nice, I guess, if I wrote them down, but I don't even write them down because I just prefer to think of them that way.
Yeah. Well, I save my bibs. And so I kind of have a stack of bibs and I can pull them out and.
Yeah. Yeah. And most of mine.
Yeah. Although I did forget one. I pulled, it didn't have the name of the race. It just, I can't remember what it said, but the race name wasn't there. It was just it's from Oklahoma. It was in Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
That sponsored races in Oklahoma. And the name of the sponsoring company is like Taos Trails, like, you know, the Outlaw Series.
Okay.
It was the same. It was, they had a series of races under their name. And so they just printed up bibs with that. They didn't have the names of each race.
Yeah.
And so I was like, what race was this? And then finally it came to me. He's like, okay, it was the Pumpkin Holler. And so,
yeah.
So, well, thank you a lot for taking time to talk with me and,
thank you.
Good running for you on your, what you're going through. It sounds like you've got a pretty, aggressive or pretty wild schedule going forward.
I do. Yeah. This last year was pretty crazy too, but, a few breaks and it's going to be this way for the next year.
Yeah.
And then we'll figure out from there.
Well, if you ever get down into Kansas, there's some races here too. I'd be glad to share some miles with you sometime.
Yeah. I did, Prairie Spirit Trail this spring.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did that and it was really cold.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was really flat, but it was a good race.
Yeah.
It,
that's a rails to trails.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Saw my first coyote during a race. That was fun.
Yeah, because the Prairie Spirit is just down the road from where I live, and so and there's a Heartland, they call it the Heartland 100, and so that's on gravel roads. The Prairie Spirit is on rails and trails, and when people talk to me about them, it takes me a minute to sort out which one is which because
right.
But yeah, prayer spirit, that's challenging because it's so flat. And
Yeah. It was colder than I expected. Luckily I had the right gear, but it took me a little time to get to it.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, if you come down and do something like that again, look me up, let me know. I'd be glad to
be glad to
say hi or help you out with crewing or pacing. So.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Good talking with you, and we'll see you later.
See you. Bye.
Bye. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you know somebody who might like it as well, please take just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. And if you enjoy most of the episodes, please tell your friends. That's the best compliment you can give. I truly enjoy being able to spend time here with you each week, and I appreciate that you take the time to listen. If you have any comments, questions, or stories that you'd like to share, go to ultramindsetpodcast.run and you can leave a written or a voice message. You can also find the show notes for this episode and more at the same link, ultramindsetpodcast.run. Remember, it takes an ultramarathon mindset to go the distance in running and in life, and a strong mindset is a skill you can learn. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.